United States v. Robinson.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, Thomas O'Malley for the defendant appellant Jamarcus Robinson, and I suppose by way of clarification, not the same O'Malley as that was referred to in the last case. Your Honors, on June 16, 2008, Jamarcus Robinson was a passenger in a car that was traveling through the southeast side of Fort Wayne, Indiana, when Detective or Officer Shane Pulver pulled the car over. The car, coincidentally, was driven by a man named David Robinson, who was no relationship to Jamarcus. The car was stopped because David Robinson was a habitual traffic violator, and Officer Pulver recognized this, having seen him, had this sense that he knew him, pulled him up on his screen, saw that he was a habitual traffic violator, pulled the car over. In the course of the traffic stop, Officer Pulver removed David Robinson from the car, and as he does so, he announced to Jamarcus Robinson, "Hey, you've got that knife in your pocket. Why don't you put your hands up through the sunroof while it's open? It makes me nervous." He then escorted David Robinson back to his car, and he announced to him in the course of a quick Terry frisk, he said to him, "You know why I'm pulling you over?" And David says no, and then he said, "Man, you're a habitual, you're HTV, man," is what he says, which is lingo for habitual traffic violator. He placed David in the back of the car and then removed Jamarcus from the passenger side of the automobile.
So what I'm trying to do in this case is break it down step by step. And here's how I break it down in terms of Jamarcus. There's the initial traffic stop, which I think everybody would agree was well within the authority of the Fort Wayne police.
Yes.
Second, there's what I think of as a brief detention of Jamarcus, where he's told, "Put your hands up by the sunroof." You know, I guess this pocket knife is in plain view. It's the exchange that the police officer suggests. So that seems to be fine as well. There's the pocket knife. Then there's what everybody's kind of calling the first frisk of Jamarcus. And that seems to me well within the scope of Terry or what have you as well. Then maybe where I would like to focus is the next step seems to be the search of the car, which is where Officer Pulver finds the scale. I couldn't quite tell if the scale was inside a case or whether the scale just kind of looks like a CD or whatever. The scale with the white residue on it, which is what the officer says triggers in his mind the theory that what we're dealing with here is drugs. Then we move on to the second frisk of Jamarcus, which is the one where eventually they find the bag. So I guess where it seems to me, if the search of the car was permissible, then everything else probably falls in place too. But if the search of the car was not permissible, then you might have something serious to say. So maybe you could tell me why you think the car shouldn't have been searched.
Your Honor, my problem is I don't believe the car should have been searched because I believe the first search of Jamarcus was not permissible. The one that you thought or which you stated seemed to be an okay Terry frisk, I believe that goes beyond a
proper... Why couldn't they frisk him, noticing the pocket knife there?
Well, and they did, Your Honor, and they did a Terry frisk.
Right. So they do a Terry frisk of him.
But
And you think that was a problem?
Well, I do find it problematic, Your Honor, in that he reaches inside his pockets and he
they claim he's kind of squirming around in the front seat and behaving a little strangely.
And he goes up into his crotch pretty forcefully there.
The police officer, yeah. Right.
If a passenger being patted down for weapons in a Terry stop clenches his arms to his sides and refuses to let the officer feel under his arms, would you argue that the officer can't push the arms aside to search those areas?
No, Your Honor, I would not.
But that's your main problem. Robinson didn't cooperate with the Terry pat-down. He clenched a different area of his body.
Yes, Your Honor.
And blocked the officer's ability to conduct an adequate pat-down.
Well, that is true, and that goes to Judge Woods's question, too, if I might. I believe at that point, though, we have Officer Pulver saying, I didn't know what it was, but I knew it wasn't a weapon. And that's on page 22 of the transcript. Now, he didn't know it was a drug, and he didn't know it was a weapon. It's not immediately identifiable as either. And he, at that point, that's when he gets interrupted and searches the car. The search of the car is problematic both under Arizona v. Gant, and I believe that at that point David Robinson is in the vehicle, locked up, and he's a habitual traffic violator, so he can't get to the car. And also, David Robinson, there's going to be no evidence that he's a habitual traffic violator inside the vehicle. So both prongs of Gant are satisfied.
Well,
yet at the same,
I don't understand how Gant applies, where you know he wasn't secured. The officer had already retrieved one weapon from him. He's not cooperating with the pat down. We have the sister and the girlfriend approaching, and at times standing behind the officer where he cannot see them. They had access to the car. I mean, there really were serious officer safety issues here, particularly the sister.
There,
I mean, the girlfriend's,
right.
You know, she's on
yes,
the
Your
outskirts.
Honor.
But boy, oh boy, that sister.
And we would have to, I think everybody would have to say that Officer Pulver should be commended for his restraint. He really was remarkably professional. But the problem is that at that point, he did not have probable cause to arrest Jamarcus.
What about reasonable suspicion, though? I mean, to continue the frisk, he interrupts the frisk and goes and looks at the car. Now, I was expecting you to argue that he couldn't have been all that afraid of Jamarcus if he goes away and takes a look at the car. Is some other officer, I forget.
Yes, there is another officer there.
There's another officer there who's keeping an eye on things, too.
Yes, Your Honor. And that officer is stationed between Jamarcus and the car.
Right.
But it's our position that at that point he had completed the Terry stop. You should have said to Jamarcus, you're free to go.
But he didn't think he had completed it, though. I mean, there's this, look, people don't have hard lumps in the middle of their body. So he knows that there's something odd.
But he didn't know what it was, Your Honor. And that is the point that I think Minnesota v. Dickerson and Terry prohibit him from going further. He knew it wasn't a weapon. And he did not immediately identify it as a drug, and so I think our own case is Rivers from the Seventh Circuit here that would say you can't go further than that in a Terry stop and frisk. You have to have probable cause to arrest to go
but
beyond that.
But the government
that
argues that I guess he was at some prior stage of uncertainty and didn't know that it wasn't a weapon either, and was entitled to just enough of a feel to come to a decision. I mean, not squishing it around and manipulating it, but
right,
something
but,
more.
But I believe he's pretty clear on page 22 of the transcript and during the video, too, in that one portion of the video where he says, I knew it wasn't a weapon. And then when I saw later on he says, when I saw the powder on the scales, I put two and two together.
Well, that's right. That's why I think if you can get him to search the car, I think it's very difficult not to say that the rest of the search of Jamarcus was all right, too, because there is now he's got residue on two things. He's got residue on the knife,
right.
Residue on the scale.
I concede that, Your Honor. Once he
okay.
searches that car,
right.
He's got probable cause. But I don't believe he has that at that point in time. And I believe that at that point in time, he was entitled to a Terry stop and frisk. He had performed it. My client was free to go. If there are no other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Lowry.
May it please the Court, My name is Leslie Miller-Lowry, and I was the AUSA assigned to handle this case. It is the position of the United States that there was no Fourth Amendment violation occasioned by the actions of Officer Pulver in this case.
Could I just ask a quick question?
Yes, ma'am.
Is a picture of the car interior showing the location of the scale in the record?
I don't believe that there is.
Okay.
I believe that the...
You know, was the powder residue immediately visible without moving the scale?
I believe what's in the transcript indicates that when Officer Pulver first looked in and saw it, that he could see that there was powder residue on the scale.
Yeah.
It is, with regard to your issue about whether the search of the car was permissible, if we look at the totality of the circumstances that were present there, the search of the car was entirely permissible. What we have is a situation where you have, for most of this incident, a single officer with a defendant who is uncooperative, physically is much larger than he is. You've got the girlfriend and a sister who is physically larger than all of them, rapidly approaching the circumstance.
And this is just a minute or so in, as I'm looking at the timeline of the video.
Yes, ma'am. The whole incident was not very long at all. All of these events were happening relatively quickly. The car door is still open. The officer, until almost the moment he decided to go back and search the car for weapons, is by himself. He says, even in the transcript, if it went to a struggle, Jamarcus would know where any weapons would be in the car. He did not, at that point, Jamarcus is not.
So what reason does he have to think, I mean, do you think then that that cars can always be searched because any passenger might have stuck a gun underneath the passenger side of the car?
No, I think what tripped Officer Pulver's suspicion was the fact that he already had one weapon come out of the pocket of the person who was in the car. And therefore, it was reasonable to think that there may be more weapons in the car. If you've got
a lot
one,
of people, how big was the knife?
He only described it as a pocket knife.
I mean, a lot of men carry pocket knives around.
Yes, a lot of men do carry pocket knives around. And if you're going to carry a pocket knife around like that, visible in this circumstance, if you look at the totality of the circumstances, with everything going on, you've got a relatively uncooperative individual with a pocket knife, with other people in the area, an open car door, proximity to the car. It is not beyond reason to think that there might be other weapons secreted in that car, and that if there was a struggle, Jamarcus Robinson more than likely, would have been able to physically overpower Officer Pulver and get to whatever might be in that car that he could use.
Trying to imagine some future case, because you keep saying totality of the circumstances, and we do have the pocket knife, I understand, and we have the fact that the sister and the girlfriend seem to have arrived on the scene literally about a minute and change after stop. Pulver initiates contact 14:58:58, and then by 15:00:04, the two women are there. But we don't. I'm just trying to figure out what else would limit this situation so that officers don't always just pat down everybody.
I think we'll
search all cars.
There certainly need to be limits on it. And I think what limits this circumstance are the facts. And I think each case is going to be fact specific. I don't think that you're going to be able to come in and say, well, there was an open car door, and so I thought I could search the car. There are more facts in this case that lead to safety concerns and that would lead a reasonable person to believe that there may be other weapons. The combination of all of those things, fact specific to what was going on here, the government submits, makes it reasonable to go back into that vehicle to make sure, at least to secure the scene, to secure his safety, to determine whether there are any more weapons in the car, as you've already got a weapon, even though maybe a common one for men to carry in their pockets, it's still a weapon in the pocket of Jamarcus Robinson. So for the officer not to have done that, to create a circumstance where the officer is, with those facts, is restrained or precluded from doing that, certainly would put the officer at a potential risk. The officer, Francis, that came up into this wasn't any bigger than Officer Pulver.
So do you think this case would have been different from a Fourth Amendment analysis if Officer Pulver had just said, I'm going to close the doors to this car, Mr. Robinson, you just can't get back in the car, because that would be another way to secure any potential weapons in the car. Do you think he could have continued searching if that's what he had done?
Closing the car door doesn't necessarily mean Jamarcus can't overpower him unless he locks the door.
I'm just trying to imagine you somehow securing the car and then turning back to Mr. Robinson.
If you secure, hypothetically, I can envision a circumstance where if you could adequately secure the car and remove the issue of proximity to the car, then the analysis would have been may be different as to the propriety of going back into the car. But what we have here is just the antithesis of that. We've got proximity and an open car door. Not to mention you've got a car that nobody's going to be able to drive. It's going to have to be taken somewhere anyway. Mm-hmm. So the driver's HTV, Jamarcus Robinson, at a minimum, is going to be arrested by the time we're done with all of this. And find the scale, the powder residue. He's already fought with the officer, which is resisting law enforcement and causing bodily injury, is a Class D felony here in Indiana. So he wasn't going to be able to get in the car, take David Robinson's keys, get in the car, and drive off. So if you winnow it all away, the car is going to have to be inventoried before it can be taken from the scene in any event. So with regard to what was recovered in the car, it would have been discovered in any event. But central to this issue, it's the government's belief that the facts in this case created such a safety concern that Officer Pulver, for his own safety and the safety of anybody else at the scene, officer or resident, as you're standing in the middle of a residential district, it was incumbent upon him to secure any weapons that were in the car.
What about the statement that Officer Pulver makes that he has already decided that this hard thing that he feels on the initial frisk of Mr. Robinson was not a weapon?
I go back. My issue with that whole thing is incumbent in the whole idea of a pat down and a brief feel is you have to be able to feel it. There's a difference between feeling it and twisting it around and manipulating it. And the cases and logic presupposes that if you're being pat down, you're not interfering with the pat down, particularly in the area that they're patting you down at that moment. So the idea of an item being immediately identifiable rests on the proposition that you've got somebody who's not interfering with what you're doing. So what Officer Pulver said was, I got a quick, brief feel of it, and then I kind of lost it. So a quick, brief feel and I kind of lost it does not even give you enough of a tactile hand on it to be able to come to some kind of conclusion as to what it is. And that being the case, given the timing of what went on, that is about the moment at which he decided to break and search.
Yeah, I mean, as a practical matter, I saw that, and I thought, well, he couldn't have been all that concerned for his safety, or he wouldn't have broken away and gone over to the car. He would have stayed with Mr. Robinson and tried to ascertain what he felt.
It's hard to go back and second-guess. However, if you have a vehicle that's open and you have proximity to the vehicle,
and these sisters running,
and this, and this, particularly the sister, who outweighs everyone, and is, if you look at the video, is loud and belligerent. It wouldn't take, it is not beyond reason for her to insert herself into the middle of what is going on to the benefit, to try to help her brother. So, and having to make a snap judgment about what to do, he decided to go secure the car. Is there another avenue that he could have taken? Is there another ending to that story? He could have done something better or differently? Sure. But what he did still falls within the bounds of reason, given the facts of what he had to deal with. Had he not done that and broke to secure the vehicle, he could have had Velma, the girlfriend, Jamarcus, all reaching for the car, and you've got two officers that collectively might weigh 2 1/4. And it's, you're outmatched. So it would seem that the better, more prudent course of action in a practical, real world, on the street sense, is to do exactly what he did and to try to secure the vehicle so that you remove any, as much as possible, any threats that might be in the vehicle from them. And once he does, once we've established that going back into the car for all the reasons that are fact specific to this case was justifiable, once the scale is recovered, it has white powder residue on it that he identifies as narcotics. He clearly at that point has probable cause to arrest Jamarcus Robinson for possession of narcotics under Indiana law. And the resulting search that recovered the cue ball sized ball of crack cocaine secreted on him was therefore lawful. I will add, just with regard to inevitable discovery, that there is no avenue or scenario under these facts by which Jamarcus Robinson would have been let to go on his merry way secreting his item. If he were taken to the Allen County, to the Fort Wayne Police Department for interview, given the nature of the charges, narcotics type charges, before they're interviewed, they're searched.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's why I've been focusing on the search of the car. I think if you get past the point of saying that he was, shall we say, a person of interest to the police and wasn't going to just go on his way, then everything else, as you say, follows. And if they took him to the police station, I'm sure they would have searched him, just as you say. His only theory under which he would succeed is one where, after that initial frisk, he's told, okay, you're free to go. Off he, maybe he's given David Robinson's keys or something, or he walks down the street and goes away, or he does something and leaves. That's the scenario under which he doesn't even wind up at the police station.
Right. He was not going to be given the keys to go on his merry way. The officer did feel something. And the fact that it was not immediately identifiable had nothing to do with the fact that it wasn't immediately identifiable, and everything to do with the fact that Jamarcus Robinson interfered with his ability to identify it, not to manipulate it, but to even identify what it is. It may be a fine line and a fine distinction, but there is common sense says in order to tell what something is, you have to at least get your hands on it. And a quick, brief feel when somebody straightens up and obscures your ability to do that does not provide you enough of a feel of the object to be able to make a determination of what it is. That seems to me why there is a distinction between getting a feel of it and squishing, manipulating, jerking, grabbing, all of those things that the law has prohibited you doing on a pat-down search. So once he's felt something, you've got a knife, you've got safety concerns. There was every reasonable, appropriate, and safety-conscious reason to go back into that vehicle to determine whether there were any weapons in that vehicle. And that is the position of the United States with regard to your main question on the issue of the propriety of the search of the car. And it's the government's position then that everything else that follows that is supported by probable cause and or inevitable discovery. And based on the record here, we'd ask that the conviction in this case be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Lowry.
Mr. O'Malley?
Yes, Your Honors. It may sound trite at this point, but I think it is good to at least revisit. A Terry stop is only to protect the officer. It's a search for weapons, and it's allowed to be a brief pat-down of the outer clothing. The object must be immediately identifiable. In this case, it was not immediately identifiable. Officer Pulver didn't know what it was, but he knew it was not a weapon. That much he did know. And that's our position. At that point, he should have left Jamarcus go. Now, the government's position has been that, well, Jamarcus somehow interfered with this. And I think if we look at the video, while there may be a tightening, I guess, or so of his backside as he kind of stands up straight there once while he's being frisked initially, the officer never, for the record, states, oh, he interfered with it, that Jamarcus prevented me from knowing what that was. The officer says, I didn't know what it was. So I don't think we can say that Jamarcus interfered with the search. I don't think that's in the record at all, and I don't think it's clear in the record. I did find Judge Rovner in response to your question. It was page 10 of the transcript where they looked at the scale. He did not move it. He apparently saw the powder on the scale as it was sitting there in the car. So our position is that you are correct, Judge Woods, that if we get to the search of the car, we're done. Our case is over. Because at that point, he develops in his mind, well, now he knows that must be drugs that were on the knife, and now he knows that it's drugs on the CD-type scale. So he goes back, and he's got probable cause to arrest. But if we stop before that search, I don't think there would be inevitable discovery. The inventory of the car would have taken place at the same time the tow truck arrived, but my client would have certainly gotten the car while carrying contraband in his buttocks, would have certainly gotten the car with his sister and left the scene. If there's no questions, I'll...
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.